This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I actually remember that whole, what was that thing where everything was going to reset from 1999 to 2000? What did they call that? That whole
Y2K scare. Button.
Yes. Yeah. Y2K. And nothing happened. The whole world went crazy. Like, aeroplanes must be grounded. Computers must be backed up. Nothing happened.
Yeah. But I think it is going to happen this year, Jeremy. It looks to me as if they're getting it right to do their, as they put it, breaking the neck of humanity in the year of the horse. I think we're in for hijinks this year. It certainly looks as if it's being set up. You know, I've got sons, I've got children, so I'm not eager for this stuff to happen. I know some Saitlanders who are, you know, some people who believe like I do in end times sorts of events and preparing and survivalism and the related stuff. I'm not one of those people who's eager for it. I'm committed to this cause because I can see the inevitability of it. I can see the trajectory. I must tell you, as a father, I'm really not keen on what I can see evolving at the moment. In the bond market, the stock market, the debt, Donald Trump's $1.5 trillion military budget, the events in Venezuela, and now the positioning for a massive strike on Iran, and that's not to mention a number of other things that people might feel are a bit speculative, so I won't mention them. But I can certainly see them evolving, and I dread it. I absolutely dread it.
Well, Cyber Polygon is effectively a World Economic Forum collaboration in which they call it an internet fragility exercise, where they try and basically break the internet. It sounds good on the outside, but I don't think it's a good thing at all because I don't trust the World Economic Forum.
Yeah, I think, Jeremy, the thing with which people struggle is the notion of self-hatred and the notion of hating your own ethnicity and so on. And therefore, they can't comprehend the idea of self-destruction and suicide and that sort of thing. You know, people say, but why would they do that? It would just be cutting off your nose to spite your face or shooting yourself in the foot. The World Economic Forum is devoted to the destruction of our civilization, just as Keir Starmer is devoted to the destruction of Great Britain. The World Economic Forum is a force for very, very, very bad things. Fortunately, now with the Epstein files, many observers and commentators are being forced to confront the idea of evil. Whereas in years gone by, they might have been the same people who would have said, I think that everybody has goodness inside of them. I think that everybody is inherently good. And I think that it's wrong of you to be so judgmental. The reality is that some people are inherently bad, and anybody who has a lot to do with animals, as I do, knows that the idea of the bad seed is a real thing. It's just some creatures are born wicked. Their DNA is not as sound as you and I might like it to be. And people like Jeffrey Epstein and Leslie Wexner and Donald Trump and the rest are just inherently very, very bad people who are past masters at getting their personalities or their natures past other people, you know? And some people will fall for it every single time. If you talk about a cyber polygon bringing down the world, potentially the internet, which would be the world because it would bring down the ability to transact. It would bring down the ability to draw cash and to use a card otherwise, you know, if you weren't using cash. Everything would go to hell immediately. I mean, if you consider how many water treatment facilities in the world are driven by a computer. There was a story from a couple of years ago. It was mainstream media story. I forget who. I want to say CBS, but I can't be certain. In which they went to a little town in New Hampshire, I believe. A town of a few people, you know, a few thousand. And they interviewed the head of the utilities of that town about an FBI uncovering of a Chinese hacking of the water treatment plant. The FBI they told him that they had uncovered more than 200 such instances across the USA. Apparently, in the event of a conflict between the USA and China, China would kill off much of the US population by obviously hacking, causing these water treatment plants across the USA to mix the ingredients incorrectly. And you know, chlorine and fluoride and hexathane are terrible, terrible, terrible things. So they would just bomb extra of this stuff in the water overnight, and next morning everybody would wake up and, you know, have a drink of water as I do first thing in the morning, or make a cup of coffee, and three quarters of the town would be dead before 7 o'clock in the morning, which is reminiscent of the Amaryllis Fox interview by Tucker Carlson, in which she said when she was a CIA operator, they uncovered, I believe in 2014, a three-day exercise by North Korea, in which on the first day, North Korea passed a satellite over the eastern seaboard of the USA, and they calculated that its only purpose, given the trajectory, could have been to rehearse an EMP attack on the entire eastern seaboard of the USA. The next day, a major electrical plant, I'm not sure what is quite the correct word, it's not a generation facility, but it's like a big transmission facility, huge one, in California was attacked by ninjas, you know, guys dressed in black, leaping over fences and so on, and disconnecting the CCTV cameras, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they neutralized this enormous electricity plant very severely. And for some time, the residents of the nearby city didn't have electricity. And then about 14 days later, if I remember correctly, they uncovered that on day three, the following had happened. So there was a delay before they worked it out. But a disguised vessel, North Korean vessel, birthed in a big port on the western seaboard, the Pacific seaboard of the USA. And then the crew did a runner. And by the time that the port captain sent somebody to investigate why they hadn't left as they were meant to, or they weren't paying extra berthing fees, they disappeared. And so they opened the ship up, and in the hold was a series of missiles positioned to strike various cities and strategic infrastructure. So I just, when you spoke about the cyber polygon, those thoughts came to mind, just how vulnerable society is to that thing that you mentioned.
There's a subtle segue in what you're talking about there to a very brief discussion you and I had earlier this morning. So I sent you a message saying that I think that BRICS is a sham. Now, China is part of BRICS, and so are we here in South Africa. We're part of BRICS. And you disagreed. So tell me why.
BRICS hasn't been the overnight spectacular success that some people feared it might be or hoped that it would be, depending on your perspective. That's true. However, I think that the reason, I didn't research this before coming on, but I think that there are now 42 countries that are either members or have applied for membership and are hoping to be accepted at the end of this year. And the reason there's been such a rush, in spite of US sanctions and bullying and what have you, is because they are perceiving what success there is. And at a fundamental level, they have been able to organize a bloc that is doing some pretty special things. For instance, Saudi Arabia, the Chinese recently built two bullion vaults, one in Hong Kong and one in Saudi Arabia. Or the one in Hong Kong is for receiving bullion in return for goods produced in China. The one in Saudi Arabia is for the Chinese to deposit bullion safely in the hands of the Saudi Arabians in return for oil. And they've just done a transaction in which I believe 60% of the deal was not done in currency, it was done in gold. The Indians have recently passed a law, very, very recently, whereby banks are compelled to accept silver as collateral for loans. So in one move, silver has become money again. It has a proxy, which is currency. But in the minds of all of the people of the world's largest population, silver is now understood to be money. I can deposit silver at a bank, I get currency in return, I buy a little motorbike, and I become a motor taxi driver. And then, best of all, at the end of it, I get the silver back. So I give the bank some little bits of paper every month until that silver is redeemed by that paper, and then I get my hard asset money back. And that illustrates the idea that, as I said to you, the way I see it is an obese man with skinny legs and bad joints is not difficult to trip up, because his center of balance, center of gravity and his sense of balance are all warped by having weak legs and an enormous torso. Likewise, the dollar. The dollar, for all of its good qualities, has become very, very bloated, and it is propped up by a very delicate system. That system is, for instance, the petrodollar. In one fell swoop, there is no more petrodollar. Every other country in the world now is trying to find ways to emulate China and to give Saudi Arabia something other than dollars that they have to purchase on the open market. Likewise, at the end of last week, the Chinese government issued a notice to all banks in which they advised them to cease buying U.S. Treasury bonds, in other words, U.S. debt. 3 Mondays ago, the yield on the bonds are issued through sort of an auction process. So if the United Kingdom, which calls its bonds gilts, wishes to raise money, as every country in the world has to, because every country in the world is spending more than it's receiving, that is to say at the national level, then the United Kingdom goes to the market and says, we're trying to raise £1 billion. We'll give you 0.5%, let's say, if you will buy this debt from us, these bonds. And what happened in Japan was that the market declined to purchase 40-year long-term bonds at the going rate, which was 0.8%. And in one day, they pushed the rate up to 4.2%. That would be as if I grew, as I'm 5 foot 10 inches, if I grew to 20 or 25 feet tall, I'd be by very, very far the tallest man in the world. And I'd be half as tall as the maritime pine trees that grow on my farmstead, the farmstead that I occupy. I don't own it. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal thing. So what we're seeing is that the Western system is being corroded through some sort of a coordinated effort between key members of BRICS. It is true that the South African contribution is absolutely shambolic. It's embarrassing. And the Russians and the Chinese know it. And if you engage the right people in conversation, senior, serious people now, they will begrudgingly admit it. BRICS is not some spectacular overnight success, but it is smashing that the nexus of Western finance and economics and trade in very, very, very meaningful ways. The petrodollar story cannot be overstated. And we're seeing it in the U.S. bond markets, and we're seeing it in the devaluation of the dollar, and we're seeing it in the gold and silver price moves. And people, you know, then there's a pullback. And we have all of the data to show, to prove conclusively, that the pullback was engineered entirely by JP Morgan using millions of bots and quants. There's absolutely no disputing it. But the man on the street sees it as a surge that went wrong. And what the man on the street is not thinking about is that the COMEX is not a stood for delivery market. And the LBMA, the London equivalent, is like a financial, it's for backing things. It's for very serious financial moves, the gold and silver markets in the LBMA. The Shanghai market, though, is a stood for delivery market. Its purpose is to buy silver and sell silver that is then used for a purpose, as opposed to, you know, rich, clever people, banks and so on in New York playing on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange's commercial metal exchange. So, you know, the bifurcation is so severe that the last time I looked at the Shanghai price, it was $123. It might have pulled back a little bit now. But we know that there's this year there will be 1.3 billion ounces of silver required for manufacturing only. 1.3 billion. We know that this year, mines around the world will produce about 800 million ounces. And they can't produce more because that's not how silver mining works. It's a byproduct of much bigger mining endeavors. So nobody's going to ramp up a $1 billion a year copper mine in Zambia or Zaire for the sake of $200,000 of silver that is produced as a byproduct, copper, lead, or zinc mine. With the result.
Sorry, go on.
I'll end with this. With the result that we know for absolute certainty that there will be a 500 million ounce shortage of silver this year. And you can see, if you look closely, the degree to which the Chinese and the Russians are they're playing a kind of a Tai Chi or judo type thing in this battle. It's very subtle. It's very unaggressive. It's very tacit and receptive. But it is working very well to smash the Western system in the face. And I put it to you that by the end of this year, there will be nobody who says, I'm not too sure about BRICS, whether it's working or not. What is playing out now, what has been playing out since, call it October for the sake of a number, when the Indians took delivery of a phenomenal amount of silver from the COMEX, which there's not supposed to be delivery on the COMEX. What's playing out now is almost the birth pangs of a very great crisis that is being largely engineered by the three senior members of BRICS, that is to say, Russia, India, and China, Jeremy.
In principle, I like BRICS. I'm kind of agnostic, if I'm being honest, because I don't like the unification of countries. I mean, look at what happened to the EU. It's become a totalitarian authority over, you know, over the sovereignty of multiple European countries. And the African Union, for example, could become that. And I'm, you know, intrinsically opposed to that. I suppose BRICS is different in that it's more of an idea and it is more of an opposition to Western hegemony, which I think is a good thing. I mean, you can see this already happening, Simon. You've got these bilateral trade agreements happening within BRICS countries. I think China and Russia trade not with the US dollar, but I think with ruples and with yuan, as well as India and Russia trading with rupees and ruples. They're not using the US dollar much anymore. So, I mean, that is a good thing. Because what it does is that it creates competition from within the global economy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the just to elaborate on what I was saying and on what you're saying too, one of the implications of what you're saying, people keep yapping about the $38 trillion U.S. debt. The federal debt of the USA is $40 trillion because we're in the middle of a budget cycle that began in September that had $2 trillion of debt baked into it. So it's de facto $40 trillion. The annual U.S. federal receipts are about $4.5 trillion. Last year's budget was a little over $6.5 trillion. So baked into this budget cycle is another $2 trillion of debt. On top of that, in 2024, just after Donald Trump had won the elections, spectacularly to those who observe such things like myself, unbelievably, incredibly, the Biden administration granted him a fantastic gift. The U.S. budget cycle works from September, but the U.S. defense budget within the overall budget, within the budget, the defense budget works January to December. So every December, they wrangle over the next year's budget. And Joe Biden upped the budget of 2025 from $800 billion to $900 billion, an incredible, mind-blowing increase to those who were observing it. Then in 2025, December, we went through the same thing, and the budget was upped from $900 billion to $1 trillion. This is outside of the budget that was agreed in September. Then Donald Trump went to Davos, and he spoke about something he'd said in December. He spoke about having a budget of $1.5 trillion. So if we add that extra into this year's budget, into this year's debt, I should say, then you're looking at about close to $41 trillion. Now, on top of that, so they've got to raise about $2.5 trillion, maybe a little bit more. On top of that, in this year, by sheer bad luck, $9.6 trillion of the 38/40 trillion of the pre-existing 38 is a better way to put it, is coming up for renewal. Now, the way that that debt works is that 9.6 is not, call it for the sake of round numbers, it's not 25% of 38. It's actually over 33%, because some of the debt, it's very, 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 very technical, is what they call inaccessible debt. So it's an enormous proportion of U.S. debt has to be rolled over, has to be renewed this year, because the capital is not being paid down. So in this year alone, Bessent has to raise $12 trillion, just at a time when the Chinese are saying to their banks, don't buy U.S. treasuries anymore. At a time when the Indians are paying Russia for natural gas in rupees and rubles, as you rightly say. At a time when the Chinese are using yuan to pay for Russian gas. At a time when the Chinese are paying the Saudis in oil rather than in petrodollar. So there's a coalescence, a black swan of events that is doing far more harm to the US dollar, to the US economy, and to this integrated Western system to which you alluded, you know, competition and and the undermining of hegemony that most people are not seeing and not talking about, but it's there. Anybody can test anything that I've said so far and that I'm going to say on this program. And they will find observers who use the words that I do. This is terminal. This is going to break the back of the Western financial, the Western integrated, dollar-dependent, Bretton Woods-based, US-dominated financial and economic system in a way like the world has never, ever seen. And it's going to happen in this very year. You are absolutely dead right. What's occurring now is a development of an alternative that you and I have never had to contemplate in our lifetimes. We've always just been the automatic recipients of the benefits of being white, middle class, English speaking, let's say at the risk of being conceited, high IQ. We've always functioned in a system that was ideal for us, and that is changing before our very eyes.
Yes, and I think something to keep in mind also is that China and Russia are pretty much driving it. And China does not work in an overnight strategy. They work long-term. Slow, gradual chipping away, right? And I think that's brilliant. I actually think it's a very rock-solid way of doing things. It's a great strategy rather than doing things as fast as possible. And we can see the effects of BRICS already here in South Africa. What does America actually export other than bombs, Hollywood, sanctions, tariffs? And then Trump imposes tariffs on half the world. How in any way is that going to benefit the average American?
It's not. It's not. Inflation in the USA, I have very strong links to the USA. I hold conversations with knowledgeable, informed, clever, successful people in the USA every day of my life, at least 6 days a week, and have done so since 2017. I now hold about an hour a day of conversations. It used to be 2 to 3 hours a day of conversations with American supporters of Saitlanders, the organization for which I work. And some of those people are in retail. And the U.S. inflation is north of 15%. That is absolutely unquestionable. If you mean by the word inflation, which is incorrect, but if you mean the increase in the prices of consumer, the consumer price index, if you like, what you pay for a house, a car, a shoe, a laptop, etc. It's now reached the point where it's absurd. I can a rand. It's about, what is the exchange rate to the pound, Jeremy? Would it be about 19 20. Or 20 to 1? 20. So it takes 20 rand to buy 1 pound, and it takes about 15 or 16 rand to buy $1. I can buy a little packet of chips for under 5 rand in South Africa. You cannot buy, not nowhere in the USA, a packet of chips for a dollar or less. The same with Coca-Cola. I pay 10 rand for a supersized Coca-Cola, a 440 milliliter Coke, and you can't get a Coke for half that size for a dollar anywhere in the USA. So to answer your question, the USA can't export anything except derivative-based debt and Hollywood and not so much arms anymore, because over just the past few years, the world has seen Russian arms develop beyond anybody's imagination, and they're half the price of US arms, if not less. There are some countries that are still tied into multi-year or multi-decade deals with the USA, but many of them are trying to get out of those deals because they can get so much more advanced technology for so much less money from Russia and to some extent China, excuse me. If the USA began a major effort to export trousers or serviettes, napkins, nobody would buy them because the amount of money that they require for their stuff is just absurd. That is a product of the debasement of the dollar through debt, which is primarily a function of Donald Trump's two terms in office. The way he spent money last year and the way he's preparing to this year, $1.5 trillion. The gross receipts of the USA are $4.5 trillion federal, at the federal level. $4.5 trillion. So Donald Trump is saying at Davos, I'm going to spend one third of all of the taxes paid, the gross receipts, tariffs, customs when they're implemented at a federal level, visa fees, everything that the federal government takes in, I'm going to spend one third of that on the military. It's lunatic, Jeremy. It is really, really lunatic. And very, very few people are talking about it, even though the information is out there. So sorry, that was my long-winded way of saying, yeah, you're dead right. It can't export anything because it thinks in terms that don't make any sense at all. For instance, here's the classic example. Sorry that I'm just going on and on. In the USA now, if you go to a Starbucks or a similar place, when you pay, there's a little message that pops up on the screen saying, do you wish to tip 20%, 25%, 30%, 35%. These people have lost their marbles. You walk into a US restaurant or a Starbucks where the people are standing behind the counter, the servers, and even in the restaurant scenario, that person takes you to the table with the menus and says, would you like to order your drinks? And invariably, you know what you're in the mood for drinking. It's very seldom that you deliberate for 20 minutes over the wine menu. You order your drinks, she goes and fetches them and comes back and takes your food order. She takes that to the kitchen and then you don't see her for a while and then she brings you your food. She's been to the table three times. She goes away and might come and check on you. She's been to the table four times. A US waitress will very, very seldom check on you twice. She comes back to clear. She's been there five times. She comes back with the bill. She's been there six times. She's walked maybe 30 paces and returned, that's 60. 60 times 6 is 360. She's walked 360 paces. In other words, she's done the equivalent of me walking out of my house, out of my farmhouse, and down the road, one field, one short field. And she believes, and her bosses believe, that she has added or put in 30% of the value chain of the steak and the potatoes and the sauces and the cutlery and the that she, in 360 paces, on your, say, $200 meal, or let's bring it down to a cheap steak in the USA, $35, if you're very, 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 very lucky, plus drinks, everything else, if you're very, very, very lucky, $50 meal, she expects you to give her at the very least a $15 tip. These people have lost their minds from the start to the finish. There's nobody in the USA talking about the imbecility of their tipping system. There's nobody in the USA screaming blue murder about the fact that Donald Trump wants to take one third of every cent that all of the human beings of the USA and non-US citizens who, for instance, buy a visa or who get tax federal tax when staying in a hotel on holiday, blah, blah, blah. All of that wealth generated, all of the taxation, one third of it should be thrown into the US military. They've lost all sense of perspective, Jeremy. Excuse me for going on for so long.
I know a guy in China. He's an American. He's an economist. And he's been living in China for 30 years. His child is obviously born in China. His wife is Chinese. Can be an American citizen. And the embassy has requested that he applies for, an American passport. He doesn't want that. Nope. He'd rather have a Chinese passport because he knows where the future trajectory is pointing. And I mean, he says he doesn't like Xi Jinping, but he prefers Xi Jinping over Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I watched a video yesterday about an American woman who was getting health services in China. So she went for a doctor's appointment at a hospital, and then she got medication, and the grand total was $12.07 or 17 cents. 2 years ago in the USA in Gallatin, Tennessee, I was having severe blood sugar problems, which thank God I've now rectified for the most part. And they were so severe that I went to a doctor's office and I said to the woman behind the counter, look, with all due respect, I need to know what this is going to cost. You can't just give me a bill afterwards and hope that I'll pay it. I'm a foreigner traveling through the USA on a limited budget. The bill's just not going to get paid if it's too much money. So they would have done two tests, a blood glucose test that tells you what your blood sugar level is right now, and an A1C test, which tells you what it is over time. And the blood sugar test you can get in the Walgreens for, I don't know, one test would be a few cents, even in US money. And the A1C, I ended up buying my own A1C test and doing it myself, and that cost $30. The woman behind the counter eventually fessed up, as the Americans say, and she said to me, well, it's $150 for a doctor's visit, and then we've got to send the results away. I said, but you buy the thing in the Walgreens, you look at the results, you see it there in front of you. Oh, no, we work with a laboratory, and we've got to send the results away. And I can't remember all of the numbers involved, but it was close to $1,000. In China, I don't think they would charge you $10 for that service. That's how out of kilter this is. That in small towns in the USA, to have the most rudimentary medical work performed on you costs a fantastic sum of money. In our money terms, 15, 16, 17,000 Rand, depending what the exchange rate is today. It's a phenomenal sum of money. And the rest of the world is seeing the USA stumble through this madness. And people like your friend, the American, are saying, I don't want to be a part of that anymore. Don't offer me your passport. Don't offer me your citizenship. Keep well away from me. I don't want to pay your taxes, and I don't want to be subject to your interpretation of international law, and I don't want to be obligated to return to the USA if there's a war, whatever the case may be. I want you to have no hold over me because you're losing your minds, and too few people are saying it.
If there were to be a hot global war, you're probably safer in either Russia or China than in the US.
Yeah, I think, Jeremy, that the world is so fed up with what the USA has done over time that I think that when the retaliation comes, it's going to be severe. You know, on the 28th of December, Donald Trump, the story apparently goes like this. Donald Trump apparently rang up Vladimir Putin for a chat about these ongoing pantomimes of negotiations that are clearly, on the American part, deliberately intended not to succeed. And he had apparently a long-winded conversation that just went around and around and around in circles, and the Russians were eventually rolling their eyes at the loquacity of this verbose American president. And at some point in the conversation, Donald Trump asked Vladimir Putin, oh, by the way, where are you at the moment? You know, making small talk. And Putin lied to him and said, I'm at my house in Valdai, my holiday home. And Donald Trump said, oh, that's ever so good. This was right at the beginning of the conversation. An hour later, they're still on the phone, and 91 NATO drones attempted to bomb that residence, although the Russians had fooled Donald Trump. Vladimir Putin wasn't there, and in any case, the air defenses shot down those drones. My point being that the level of patience that we're seeing is, as you say, it's generational patience. It's how the Chinese function and how the Russians are functioning and how people in the Middle East do function. And I don't think that the hubris of Americans, everybody is a little bit arrogant. There are very few. You're one of them. You know, the truly modest people that I know, I can count on one hand. Everybody else that I know is always keen to brag, some more, some less. And some are not even bragging. They're just being conceited. They're imagining their own talents and successes. You almost can't blame America for having been the haughty creature that it has been for the past 60 years. It was big and it was fat and it was loud and it was brash and it was able to beat everybody up. And if you didn't listen, it would just Agent Orange you and, you know, destroy millions of people in Vietnam. And but those people don't forget the way that Americans forget. Americans remember maybe their last hamburger. And I'm not, I don't mean to say that Americans have no good qualities. What I'm saying is that their lives are all about instant gratification. It's all about this moment now and me. Me in this moment. These other people who are becoming infuriated by the behavior of the United States of America, since roughly speaking, the Bretton Woods Agreement in Mount Washington Hotel in New Hampshire in 1944. The conceit, the vanity, the hubris, the ego, the absolute self-serving nature of the United States of America are going to, when they do lose their tempers, they're going to do it properly. And I don't want to repeat myself or be long-winded, so I'm not going to, but people should be listening to the warning I'm giving today. Not because I know everything, but because there are very few people in the world who are willing to speak publicly about the things that I speak about. Most people are very much more cautious than I was during COVID and during the vaccination campaign and when we had a crisis with our national electricity provider, Eskom, here in South Africa, and about Russia, and about what's going on in the USA. People hedge their bets and they allude faintly to things. I'm one of the very few people who will speak very boldly about these things. For my sins, I do it. The reality is that the world is changing before our very eyes, and it is going to be an extremely, extremely, extremely painful event, and it's going to happen in the year 2026. Because this is the year, as I've already said, and reiterate, I don't want to repeat, because of a debt load that is unknown in the history of the world, because of extra debt that has to be incurred that is absolutely unprecedented. Never, ever, ever has a country had to raise $12 trillion just to keep its head above water. And the list goes on. People who've listened to the whole show will know the scenario that I've sketched. Right now, the Western world is poised to get smacked in the face by a very hard fist, such as we have never known, because we have been the fortunate beneficiaries of a system that was all about us. It was all about high IQ individuals performing very well. It was about using the English language as the dominant medium of everything. It was about inheriting the spectacular achievements of the civilization that has dominated the world. There've been ups and downs. We know that, but no one else can claim the civilizational success that we can, going back to 1100 BC, 3,000 years. And to unwind that is not something that's done overnight, but it is happening, and it's happening in a very meaningful way. It's like a fat man with very skinny legs, weak legs, and bad joints. The US dollar, yes, it's wonderful, but it is dependent on, it's maintaining this $38 trillion debt, maintaining success in the bond markets and only paying low interest rates, has been dependent upon the world having to cozy up to the USA, to buy a pair of... Previous to the architecture that the Chinese have recently put in with Enbridge and the related instruments, if I used any card in the world to buy any product in the world, the transaction was intermediated in dollars. So I didn't use our currency, South African currency, the rands, to buy sneakers or plimsolls or tackies, you know, soft running shoes. In China, if I ordered on Alibaba, that transaction went through a dollar intermediation, for which, number one, I lost on the exchange. It's like the first time you go overseas. You know, you watch the news every night, perhaps in your home country, and it says the dollar is 10-1, whatever the case may be. You get to the Bureau de Change in the airport. You're going to buy your first dollars. So exciting, and you discover that they give you 9-1, or if it's the other way around, that they demand from you 11 for $1, and you think, I'm being had, golly, and you storm off to the next Bureau de Change, and you do that 4 or 5 times before you realize that that's real life in the real world. The amount of money that you pay for an ounce of gold versus the amount that's quoted on the stupid COMEX system are night and day not the same thing. And likewise, you would pay a fee for buying dollars. You would then pay a fee for going through Visa's system. The Chinese have bypassed that with their own payment system, which it can be used almost anywhere in the world. That tiny little action is like me tripping up on my front lawn, an obese man trying to run away from me, you know, playing rugby or soccer or whatever the case may be. It's very, very, very easy. He's a big, strong guy. He's a spectacular, wonderful dollar. America's number one, the home of the free and the land of the brave. It's too beautiful for words. But it has become a mockery of itself with $40 trillion in debt and having to raise $12 trillion just to keep its head above water this year. If I ankle tap that obese man, he's going to come down, and he's going to come down hard, and we are seeing it happen. And if people don't believe me, just give me 10 months benefit of the doubt. We're seeing it in the bond markets already. We're seeing it in the silver and gold. How did silver go from $15 to $123 before JP Morgan had to push it down using quants and bots to whatever it is now, 73, 75. It doesn't matter what it is, because it's going to go back up probably to $400 very, 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 very easily once the silver shortage kicks in, because then nobody will care what the quants and the bots want the price to be. So, yeah, it's happening already. Sorry for the long-winded thing, Jeremy, but I get so worked up about this subject. It distresses me no end that nobody will talk bluntly about what is happening. Excuse me.
In China, you can use MasterCard and Visa, but it's not easy. I think they are trying to reduce reliance on Western payment infrastructure.
Yeah, I've no doubt about it, Jeremy. It's playing out before our very eyes. Can you believe, did you ever think you would see the day that Bloomberg reports, as it did yesterday morning early, that the Chinese have issued a notice to all banks not to invest in U.S. treasuries? It's inevitable that the Chinese will wean themselves off Visa and MasterCard, and you know, it's going to become cheaper for everybody because it's not going through New York and you're not paying a fee, because hitherto all credit card, as I alluded earlier, all credit card architecture in the whole world with no exceptions was built on the spine, if you like, or the skeleton of Visa and MasterCard. It's now there's another system. All of a sudden, there's another system. There just is. And in Russia, I don't know how they've bypassed it and how they've bypassed it so quickly. But when I was in Russia, you know, they've got their own thing and it works beautifully and it doesn't mesh with – it meshes with the Chinese system. I've got a very, very ferocious German sport. It's not a – or Alsatian sport. It's not a German shepherd, a new dog. And he's just come to bother me. You were telling me earlier that your dog is a bit camp. Well, this dog is the very opposite.
I like to blame my dog on my wife. It was her. It was her choice.
Yeah.
Simon, it sounds like we're dunking on the US.
Jeremy, that's nonsense, man. We've watched U.S. movies and listened to U.S. music and adopted American eating habits and wanted to move to Texas. I mean, just think of the number of South Africans and former Rhodesians, Zimbabweans, white farmers who moved to the USA years ago. People from all over the world have admired blushingly the U.S. since forever. Things have changed. It's now absurd to pay $700 for a mediocre steak. 700 rand in our money for a mediocre, a very, very ordinary, unspectacular steak. At my local hotel, which is a boutique hotel, it's a very pretty, very, very, very nice hotel. I get a steak, egg and chips, a huge piece of ribeye, the best cut of meat on an animal is ribeye. It's very unknown to most South Africans because of apartheid. Long story, but other people in the world know that the best piece of beef is a ribeye steak with chips, a garlic sauce, and a ossobuco bone that big, so marrow bone full of marrow, and two raw eggs, the fried eggs, but just the basically raw, for 125 rand, which is something like $9.
Is that near you?
Yeah, Hofmeyr Boutique Hotel, Victoria Boutique Hotel. People come from, literally, people from, say, overseas. We'll come through Hofmeyr just to see the Hofmeyr Hotel. It's tiny. It's the same size as the house, my big farmhouse, the big farmhouse of my friend that I occupy. it's miniature, but it's exquisite. And the service is fantastic. The service is out of this world, and it's as cheap as chips. And it's very feminine, you know. It's all brocade and... it's owned by a local farmer, but it was clearly done up by his wife. You know, it's very, 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 very expensive. The pictures on the wall and the bric-a-brac and the ancient books that they have on display, it's phenomenal. 125 rand, so about
120. No, 125, I can't get past that. That is so cheap.
And it's local meat, so it's a very, very, very good meat. It's not tough. It's not rangy. It's better than you can buy in a shop. You know, it's where farmers keep out the best cows for themselves, as all farmers do. All sheep and goats and cow farmers keep out the best ones for themselves, and then they'll slaughter one every 3 months. So you're getting better than you can get in a shop. Generally, what the farmers will do is they will fatten. For themselves now, I'm not talking about for an abattoir. They'll fatten naturally because they don't want to feed their children female steroids and what have you. And so it'll be like grass-fed fat. And the ones that are the most supple and good is what the farmers will feed to their children and their wives and their guests, because it's a competition. Everybody's showing off, you know, and we eat a lot of meat. So it's better meat than you can buy in a shop. I mean, it melts in your mouth. And you just say to them, like I always say to them, don't be stingy and don't steal my money. And I catch them every time. You know, they look at me, how dare you insult us? So, you know, sit down and start insulting. I say, because I know you want to trim the fat off. I want the whole steak with all of its fat. I use the fat to improve my brain, you know, because animal fat is the best source of cholesterol, and cholesterol is necessary for your to repair your veins.
Yes. And yes, don't consume statins.
Yeah, and it's also necessary for myelin, and myelin is made 100% out of cholesterol. It uses nothing else. So all it is a modified structure of cholesterol, and myelin forms just over 75% of your brain. So I eat the fat to become more intelligent and to keep my heart healthy. So for 125 rand, I get it like in ounces. Jeez, I don't know what would that be like. I want to say a the 28, yeah, so it would be going on for a 20 ounce steak, but then with the fat, they won't trim the fat, so I get like, I don't know, I don't want to exaggerate, but maybe 25 ounces of food for 125 rand.
What is that in grams? I don't know what ounces are.
Jeremy, I want to say like going on for 400.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's a good cut. If it's anywhere over 350 grams, that's fair.
Yeah.
There's a farmer here in the Eastern Cape that I have begun supporting. He farms free range, obviously. So there's a bit of a premium on his meat, but what he's done is he's taken Japanese black Wagyu cattle and he's interbred them with Angus cows, and so he's got this incredibly delicious essentially Wagyu meat, and you can see it when you look at the steak, and you can see the fat, and it is one of the best steaks I've ever had.
Yeah, sorry, Jeremy. I just want to apologize for rubbing my eyes. We have very dangerous snakes here. And one of the things that you can do about it is to have cats. And I have I've got five blooming cats, because I almost died twice in 2 days. Puff adders, people should look them up. A highly, highly lethal snake. I almost stepped on the one and I put my hand almost on the other one. So I got cats. Now I've got five of the blasted things, and I've had a lifelong cat allergy. It's not that I'm falling asleep on the show. It's 17 minutes past 10 in the morning. I'm wide awake, I can assure you. But I've got these blooming, bleary eyes that don't go away anymore, and they've taken to adoring me. So, they're just, you know, it's becoming a bit of a pain, but they're not going anywhere.
Have you ever eaten snake?
No, I wouldn't want to, Jeremy. That's a bridge too far.
I also haven't, but I know people who have.
No.
It tastes like chicken.
Yeah, you can keep your chicken. Thank you.
okay, Simon, let's come in for a landing. So the moral of the story is bricks, in principle, is potentially a good idea.
It's a good idea for the beneficiaries. I think, you know, I don't want to always knock South Africa and the African National Congress government or what have you. I just get sick of it, of listening to the sound of my voice do that. But it will be more beneficial for the countries that act with the greatest alacrity. And we know how South Africa is. You know, the South African government forbade Vladimir Putin from attending his own BRICS summit meeting in 2024. It's just a shambolic thing. They're playing this trumpet. They want to have lovers this side and on that side, and they can't understand why everybody's angry with them. But for countries like China and Russia and India, imagine you're India, and you've got 1. Whatever billion people it is to feed, and you have to import endless rice and flour and you name it. And for the first time ever, and oil and everything that you have to import, you don't have to buy dollars to do it. You pay for your natural gas in rupees. So the countries who are playing the BRICS game well will reap enormous benefits. Yes, Jeremy.
How can I follow you or Saitlanders?
Well, I'm a full-time employee of Saitlanders. So the thing to follow is Saitlanders. I'm just one moving part in a large organization, which is fundamentally a civil defense organization devoted to preparing for times of crisis that some of us believe are very, very much on the horizon. And the place to do that is Saitlanders.org. You can go there. You can make a donation. We really need the help. Please, 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 please. Donate to Saitlanders on Saitlanders.org. It's very easy to do. Or you can follow the Saitlanders videos that we do on YouTube. Some of them are in the Afrikaans language. I do ones in the English language. Very easy to do.
Thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you for having Saitlanders again, Jeremy. We appreciate it.